Welcome to The Tax Factor, the top 20 business and investment podcast from Blick Rothenberg, the tax, accounting and business advisory firm. This week with Matt Crawford and Ellie Theachari.
Thanks for waiting. Your call is important to us. Please continue to hold.
Ah, there we are, the familiar, perhaps all too familiar voice to open this week's episode of The Tax Factor. No doubt sending shivers down many spines, but a little bit more on that later. I'm Matt Crawford, and someone I'm much more pleased to hear from is my colleague Ellie Theachari, who joins me today on The Tax Factor. Hi, Ellie.
Hello, Matt. Lovely to be back.
So, welcome to The Tax Factor, the top 20 business and investment podcast that keeps you up to date on all of the latest tax news. We're back together this week to talk about a recent high income benefit charge win for the taxpayer, the effect of the crackdowns in the R&D tax industry, changes to minimum wage and sick pay.
Before we get into those topics, hot off the press this afternoon, HMRC has reversed its decision to close its self-assessment telephone helpline. So many of you will have seen that on Tuesday, HMRC had said that the helpline would be closed between April and September, then reopening between October and March. And then during that time, taxpayers would be directed only to online services unless in very specific circumstances. However, less than 24 hours later, it said the helpline would actually stay open this summer.
So that's an amazingly quick U-turn. If they could answer the phones as quickly as that, that would be absolutely fantastic. I think I'm starting to get used to meditating to the dulcet tones of that, that particular lady.
We can but dream, Matt. But anyway, back to the topics for today. So the high income child benefit charge has been getting lots of airtime, especially around the budget. But I did see recently that a family won a court case against HMRC. So one of the quotes that I saw was that a judge found that it would be reasonable that a couple would fail to know that they needed to pay this charge because of the domestic rough and tumble of family life. What do you think about that, Matt?
I really loved it. It was an interesting case, and it's great to see some common sense being applied in the courts. So what actually happened is the Harwood family brought the case before the first tier tribunal to argue that their failure to notify was, they had a reasonable excuse, and that ignorance of the law could be an excuse, and they won on that basis. So what happened was that the Harwoods had claimed child benefit back in 2010 when the HICBC didn't exist, and again in 2014. At that point, it had been introduced, and at that point neither the mum or the dad of the family were earning over the £50,000 threshold. And a couple of years after that, Mr. Harwood, he was a car salesman, and he started using some of the demonstrator cars personally, which unbeknownst to him or his wife pushed him over the adjusted net income threshold of £50,000. And it was also around the same time as that, just completely coincidentally, that HMRC carried out their quite intensive press campaigns to alert people of the new changes, and also started sending out their one-to-many nudge letters that we've talked about an awful lot of times before on The Tax Factor. And unfortunately, the Harwoods didn't receive these original letters and therefore didn't respond, as the layout of their road meant that letters went to the wrong house. But this didn't go against them when it went to court, as the judge referenced the fact that once Mr. Harwood was in contact with HMRC, he would respond very quickly, and therefore he could assume that he would have responded in the same way had he have received the letters. And that's a really interesting point, actually. I've got several clients, they based overseas, and they receive some letters and not others from HMRC. And so this case around whether or not a letter has actually been served or an assessment has been served, I think we can apply that a lot more widely. And that's going to be really useful context going forward, because HMRC Post is so unbelievably unreliable. You know, back to the case in question, the judge also felt that for Mrs. Harwood, because it felt that for her to have spotted that her husband was earning more than the £50,000 threshold and then put the two and two together based on a form that she hadn't filled out for many years, in the context of not having had any kind of communication with HMRC, was, and I quote, an unrealistic situation in the knockabout of domestic life when bringing up small children, holding down a job and doing one's best to make a success of home and work life, which I thought was a wonderfully pithy and reasonable statement. The Harwoods had actually paid the assessment and penalties in full already. They'd even sold their family car to do so. So they weren't racking up any interest. And so it looks like HMRC have got to write a check.
It was such an interesting case when I read it, because as you said, it is common sense. You read it and you think, you know, they were never liable to the charge. Any forms that they had seen before law, it would have been, you can just ignore X, Y, Z. And then two, you know, for the judge to actually recognize that, for them to have remembered some small print that they had seen 5 years ago would just be unreasonable. Who remembers? I mean, a lot of people, I don't think, even read the small print on many things that they see. So it was great to see that. So something that is a little closer to my heart, R&D tax reliefs. In the news last week, a Kent-based R&D business stopped trading. Now, that was figured out when someone tried to go on their website and there was just a message that said, this business is no longer in operation, which of course set alarm bells ringing. It was a very large R&D tax provider and they had claimed to have had around 3,000 clients, and their R&D claims being handled were around approximately £20 million. So a very, very large company. For many of us in the industry, this business shutting down and no longer trading hadn't really come as much of a surprise. They were known for quite aggressive sales tactics, and there is some terminology that HMRC have basically said they don't like R&D advisors using anymore, such as, we have a 100% success record, or we will get your claim accepted. Phrases like that were seen as kind of no-goes now, and they were still using that as part of their sales tactics. For anyone watching the R&D space or the people that have stayed close to it, this is kind of symptomatic of that change of environment and the amount of scrutiny that is now being piled onto advisors, because in order to bottom out fraud and stop abuse of the system, these are the kinds of measures that HMRC are going to have to go down. And that increased scrutiny, yes, whilst it's welcomed, and these kinds of businesses ceasing to operate and ceasing to potentially make claims that are ineligible is fantastic, although there have been genuine claimants that have been caught in the crossfire. So if you're working in this space, you need to keep up with the pace of change and be able to adequately respond to HMRC's challenges. Of course, we don't know all the ins and outs about why this business shut down, but you can probably assume that HMRC opening a huge amount of inquiries is not a good situation for any business to be in, really. So if there are any businesses out there who have either had claims made by a business that has ceased operating, or if they aren't really equipped to help you with inquiries, we have a very skilled team that can help. So get in touch if you need to.
Yeah, thanks, Ellie. I think my world, the area that's kind of very dear to my heart, is the world of employment status. And there are an awful lot of companies out there that use terms like 100% success record when considering things such as IR35. Now, given, you know, I don't pretend myself to understand or have read every single bit of case law in that area, it's an extremely complex area. And I think anyone offering those sorts of assurances, you should look at them very carefully. And I think I wouldn't be at all surprised to see some of those promoters coming down in exactly the same way in the future. So it sounds like things in the R&D space are moving in the right direction, even if there's some casualties along the way. But overall, the quality of R&D claims should improve, which is a good thing for clients and a good thing for HMRC. Speaking of some upcoming changes, last week a consultation was launched that will last until the 9th of June, which is all about changing the reporting requirements for trusts filing on the Trust Registration Service. And that's all about trying to increase transparency in higher risk trusts whilst reducing the admin burden for lower risk trusts and looking at how they might curb money laundering. So there's a central register of the beneficial ownership of taxable trusts called the Trust Registration Service. And the main changes that are potentially going to come in is the requirement to register all non-UK trusts with no UK trustees that own UK land acquired before the 6th of October 2020. A number of other potential changes as well. But one of the kind of more interesting tax changes is that they might be introducing a de minimis for low-risk non-taxable trusts to reduce the administrative burdens. So that's really some quite good news there. There will be some tax changes, the result of the de minimis changes, and the plan is to exclude from registration any trusts that meet a range of tests. And those tests include the trust not being liable for relevant UK taxes, not holding more than £5,000 in assets, and not distributing more than £2,000 in assets and expenses in any 12-month period. So it's all due for consultation, and we'd like to see where that one goes.
Thank you, Matt. So now on to some good news as well that will leave many more with money in their pockets. The national minimum wage, national living wage and apprenticeship pay will be increasing from the 1st of April. And the national living wage will have its band increased now to include workers from 21 to 23 rather than having 21 to 22 and 23 and up. So a full-time worker aged 23 on this wage would receive an annual rise of about £1,800 a year, and a 21-year-old would see an effective £2,300 annual rise. So that's really great news, especially in a cost of living crisis. It's also really good news for all types of statutory family leave, which will be increasing from just over £172 to £184 weekly. So this includes maternity, adoption, paternity, shared parental leave, and parental bereavement pay. So there are a huge number of people that will see wages increase, which will hopefully, you know, help people throughout this ongoing cost of living crisis.
Brilliant. Thank you, Ellie.
So that's about all we have time for today. We're off to call HMRC before they change their mind to close the phone lines again. So we'd like to remind you there's lots of information and detail on the Chancellor's budget on the Blick Rothenberg website. And this is updated with insights and analysis from our team of experts and features our now famous tax calculator. So you can see if you are better or maybe even worse off. You can also download our free tax facts guide, which has been fully updated following the budget. Please visit the Blick Rothenberg website and follow the links on the homepage.
We've also released the next episode in our Success Stories series. Each episode in the series focuses on one of our clients' journeys to success and their advice to other businesses and fellow entrepreneurs. In this one, our audit, accounting and outsourcing partner, Daniel Burke, talks with Dino Sura, Managing Director of global restaurant business Burger & Lobster. It's well worth watching. The Tax Factor is back next week with Nima Shah, and whilst accountants are cautious people, I'll be betting he'll have something else to say about non-DOMs and maybe even potentially child benefit. He'll be joined by another one of our colleagues, Neil Insull. Thanks to Ellie for joining me this week. I'm Matt Crawford. Thanks for listening and goodbye.
That's The Tax Factor. We'd like to thank you for making us one of the UK's top 20 podcasts. Find all our previous episodes wherever you get your podcasts. And join us again next time on The Tax Factor.